Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
A glossary of terminology and jargon from Dante Valentine is included on the final track of this recording. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Croix's Dante Valentine. Narrated by Colleen Delaney. With performances by Kimberly Gilbert, Thomas Keegan, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, Joe Brack, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Yasmin Twazon, Ren Casey, Tim Getman, Nanette Savard, Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, and Terrence Aselford. Book 2, Dead Man Rising, Part 2.
Jace slept heavily, lying on his side, his face relaxed without its shield of good humor. Dirt smudged his cheekbones and his forehead. His hair was stiff with dry sweat and dust. Grime worked into the small, thin wrinkles that were beginning to etch his flesh, the lines that would grow deeper soon.
He's getting older. So is Gabe.
I lay on my side, my leg hitched up over his hip. He was sweating. Grime clinging to both of us, even though I never seemed to sweat. I traced his cheekbone with a gentle fingertip. Black molecule drip polish glinted in the dim light from the hall. The curve of his lower lip unreeled below my touch. His breathing didn't alter. He was out cold. It had been a long day. And whatever else he was, Jace was no longer young. I pressed his hair back gently, traced his eyebrow, drew my finger down his cheek. The rough stubble of his chin made my mouth twitch. He smelled of human, of decaying cells and honey-spiked power, of grave dirt and sweat.
I can't be what he wants. I don't even know what it is he wants. Then again, I've never bothered to ask him, have I?
I took my hand away and moved, slowly, infinitely slowly, until we were chest to chest. My face inches from him. His breath mingled with mine. A heady brew of demon, necromance, and shaman. My lips touched his. A feathery touch.
It's not like Javramil. It can never be like that again.
My skin crawled, remembering the intense drowning of being clasped in a demon's arms. The loathing wasn't for the memory.
It's as if my body revolts at the thought of another lover. Mutiny in my cells.
I was pretty sure I could push that aside.
I don't need to enjoy sex. I've had plenty of sex without enjoyment. I can probably even fool Jace into believing I'm having a great time.
I remembered what it was like with him before. Sex between us was another form of sparring. A chess match. A game. Each touch a challenge. The prize in the other's final abdication of control.
Sex as war, as a game, hadn't it been that way for him?
Another question I had never asked.
Would I forget he wasn't Javramel once I reached a certain pitch of excitement? If I let myself go, did what I wanted to do, what would it do to Jace?
I remembered the blinding pleasure, heart straining, lungs forgetting their function, ecstasy wrapped in barbed wire and rolled across exquisite nerve endings, a form of tantra, sex magic, reaching into the deepest level of genes and psyche to remake me.
Remake? In whose image?
I hesitated, my lips touching Jace's.
Would it kill him? Remake him?
I doubted it. I had no illusions about the amount of power I had. Not enough to rival Jaframel even when he had fallen. And yet, the research I'd managed to do between bounties had made me no wiser about the exact limits of what I was.
I probably wouldn't change him into anything. But I don't know. I know nothing.
I knew nothing, and I couldn't betray Jaframel. It was an impossible situation.
But I need Jace. I want to be kind to him. I have a debt to repay to him and one to collect, and yet...
My shields quivered, shuddering restlessly. Someone was coming in on a slick board, coming in fast, and the quick brush against my shields was familiar. Garden dirt and the smell of beer and sweat. I'd expected him to drop by. I was up and out of the bed in one motion, grabbing a handful of neatly folded clothes as I ran for the bathroom. It was 3 a.m., late afternoon for most of us who lived on the night side. I felt him slide through my shields as I ducked into the shower and twisted the knob all the way over to cold as a penance. It took a little longer than I liked to scrub the grime off. But when I came downstairs, braiding my hair back the way I used to, he hadn't come in past my front hall. I stood at the end of the hall next to the stairs and took him in. Eddie slumped against the wall, fingers around his staff.
There's only three people that can key in through my shields like that. Jace, Gabe, and Eddie.
Anyone else attempting entry would be denied, whether by the security system or by the cloak of power over my house, the triple layer of shielding.
Damn. I'm lucky to have three people I can let into my home with no question. Three friends. People who have gone into danger for me when they didn't have to.
The net of obligation and duty might trap me, but it also protected me and kept me from falling into an abyss. Which abyss I couldn't quite say, but I had felt its cold breath enough to suddenly be very grateful for the man sleeping upstairs, the woman who had pulled me into this, and Eddie. In my front hall. Shaggy blonde Eddie of the hulking shoulders and long hair. The smell of fresh dirt hanging on him like it did every skinland dirt witch berserker. He seemed to carry a perpetual cloud of shambling earth smell with him, his blunt fingers seeming too indelicate for any fine work. For all that, Eddie was the most dangerous dirt witch I'd ever met in a sparring match.
I guess he has to be, to keep up with Gabe.
He wore a long camel-colored coat and a Boofish Ranks t-shirt strained on his massive, hairy chest. I studied him for a moment. He stared back, meeting my eyes for once, shifting his weight from foot to foot, his aura roiling. He made my defenses go tense and crystalline. Eddie?
Danny?
He lifted one shoulder, dropped it.
Guess you want to ask me a few?
Why? You know something. He said nothing. And my conscience pinched me hard.
Not if you don't want to talk.
It was the least I could give him. The gods knew I didn't want to talk about the hall. An act of mercy, not requiring of him what I wouldn't want to do myself. But Eddie wouldn't be here if he didn't have vital information. And if it would stop another death, he would force himself through it. He was as cottage cheese pale as I'd ever seen him.
Don't know if it's useful. But you'd better hear it.
Let me get my sword.
Time was you wouldn't answer the door without it.
Time was I wouldn't have even let you or Gabe key in through my shields and use the key to my front door, Eddie, my man. Guess I've grown up.
Someone would have to be pretty fucking stupid to come in here and start trouble. If they could get in at all without my approval.
So you got another sword?
He lifted one shaggy eyebrow. For him, that passed as tact.
He must be taking lessons from Gabe.
Figured it was time I stopped fucking around.
Amen to that!
Dear old Eddie, always dependable. I was Gabe's friend, therefore I was, no matter how sarcastic he got, worthy. That was the thing about Eddie Thornton. If you were all right in Gabe's book, Eddie would go to the wall for you. There was no deception in him, no subterfuge. Either you were worth his support or he would cut you loose. He had no middle ground. Gods above, but that was refreshing. I took Fudoshin down from the peg where my old sword had hung. My bag was already slung diagonally across my body. I shrugged into my coat. My slick's outside with Jace's. Let's go. We went to the old noodle shop on Pole Street. It was absurdly fitting. The place hadn't changed a bit. From the dusty red velour hanging on the walls, to the old Asian O man sitting in the back booth slurping his tea and eyeing us suspiciously, a curl of synth hash smoke drifting up from his ashtray. The fish tank in the back of the store gurgled softly. Two bowls of beef pho later, I was beginning to feel a little less raw.
Okay.
I grabbed a hunk of rice noodles with Plasilica chopsticks. Eddie sucked at his beer and blinked at me. I took the mouthful of noodles. I had to suppress a small sound of delight. Eating was the only thing that gave me any pleasure anymore.
Thank the gods I have a hiked metabolism, or I'd be as fat as a new Viet Cai whore.
Well, I got enjoyment from hunting down bounties, too. But it wasn't a clean enjoyment. Each bounty was a brick in the wall between me and the uncomfortable thoughts that rose when I had too much time on my hands. Eating, however, was all mine. I didn't have to think while I ate.
You're still a goddamn pig.
Says the man who eats with his fucking fingers.
Spill, Eddie. I left a warm bed for this.
How warm? Jace finally tie you up? Or did he put on horns and a pitchfork?
I laid my chopsticks down. It had taken me a year to learn to eat with my left hand wielding the silverware. Now my right hand felt clumsy, as if all it wanted to do was curl around a sword hilt.
That's one, Edward.
My tone made my teacup rattle against the table.
Now why don't you quit being an asshole and tell me what you've got?
I might know something.
He went even paler, if that was possible, looked down at the table, gulped at his beer. I suddenly longed to get drunk.
This would be so much fucking easier with chemical enhancement.
I picked up the thick white china teacup, said nothing. He squeezed his eyes shut. His hand trembled as he set his glass down.
I was there. Rigor Hall.
I'd known that, of course. He'd been a few classes ahead of me, like Christabel. Great beads of sweat stood out on his forehead.
There was a secret.
His throat worked, his Adam's apple bobbing.
I don't know much, but...
Rigor Hall was full of secrets, Eddie.
I felt the glowing metal pressed against my skin again. Heard Mirovich's papery voice.
We've got something special for those who break the rules today, Miss Valentine.
I set my teacup down.
Eddie!
The glass of beer rang uneasily. My voice was harsher than it had to be.
I have got to get some kind of control over myself.
My left shoulder burned dully as if in agreement.
Anubis Aether God, don't do this to yourself.
His eyes flew open.
You don't tell me what I do or don't gotta do. I can't go home. I can't fucking sleep. People are dying. I gotta get this done.
My heart beat thinly under my ribs, hammering with impatience and adrenaline combined. I picked up my teacup again.
It's a wonder anyone made it out. I wasn't in it. Not the black room.
I shuddered. His eyes flew open, as wide as I'd ever seen them.
No. No, not that one. No, that was the name of the secret. Because they met in that old shed off the lake, you remember?
Christabel's ghostly screaming rang inside my head. I pushed it away.
I remember.
Cold sweat lay on my skin.
Black room. Remember Rigor Hall? That's what Christabel meant.
Eddie's eyes were the eyes of a child, reliving a nightmare.
You was in the cage?
He meant the Faraday cage in the sensory deprivation vault under the school. It had been intended to help telepaths who needed a short-term respite from their gifts. Instead, it had been turned into a punishment. Scions, especially strong ones, can only stand a cage for a very short time before their psyches begin to crack under the lack of stimulation. If you weren't a telepath seeking relief, being in a cage was like being trapped in a black void. No light, no sound, and no access to the ambient power that fed magical and psychic talent. It is the closest thing to insanity I had ever known. And I still couldn't step into an elevator without shaking and feeling the walls close in. The cage of an elevator or hover lift was uncomfortably similar to the cage of Mirovich's black room. Four times.
I had two. Two was enough.
Never would have been enough. My teeth were clenched so tightly my jaw hurt. The thought of the sensory deprivation vault in the cage and the blackness rising through me to eat at the very foundations of my mind.
Segment Sias, Eddie.
I swallowed dryly several times.
You've got to get control. God damn it, Danny, get a hold on yourself.
The secret. Christabel was one of them. I wasn't. But I got friendly with one.
I waited. He would come to it in his own time. The least I could do was give him a few minutes to work up to saying whatever he had to say.
Steve Sebastiano.
Is he blushing? Now I've officially seen everything.
My jaw dropped. You got friendly with Polyamor? Polyamor. She was transvestite, one of the most famous sex witches in the world. The sex witch rumored to be so fantastic in bed that hegemony heads and even some paranormals paid just to call on her socially. The house took a healthy chunk of cash just to be put on the waiting list. Polyamor, who used to be Steven Sebastiano, a few classes ahead of me and already the source of whispers and rumor at school. I heard she'd been tutored by Persephone Dragonfly down in New Orleans at the Great Floating House and done an internship in Paradise as part of an exchange program. And one of her sex witches had been a victim. The piece fell into place neatly and I felt the little click of intuition inside my skull. The first link in the chain, the first arc of the pattern, was always the hardest. It would only get quicker from here.
Thank the gods. I don't think I can stand to look at another dead body.
Eddie shrugged, looking down into his half-empty glass.
We was roommates. Bastion was one of Mirovich's sex witch stable. Fucked him up royal.
A sex witch in Rigor Hall? Fucked up is an understatement.
So what happened? Eddie's sleepy hazel eyes were haunted. No longer the eyes of a fully grown man. Instead, they were the deep wells of pain in the face of a terrified child. I didn't need a mirror to tell me my own eyes were just as dark, just as wide and just as deep, and just as agonized. My throat was dry and tight. Mirovich. Who did him in? The Skinland shrugged.
I don't know. I just know Bastion was in it with Christabel. They had code words.
Like what?
Tig Vedum Deum.
Eddie took down the rest of his beer. He was sweating. I could smell the fear on him. Rank and thick and human.
Is it any consolation that my own fear smells like light cinnamon and musk now?
My left shoulder began to throb again, evenly, almost comfortingly. Part of the Nine Canons. Second canto, line 4. I shifted on the vinyl bench, looking down at the remains of my second bowl of soup.
Gee, I've lost my appetite. Go figure.
For sealing a spirit in its grave.
And for short-circuiting a feeder.
Eddie's bushy eyebrows drew together. He glared at the table as if it had personally offended him. Any truth to the rumor that one of the students was a feeder?
Come on, Danny, why would that have jack shit to do with these murders? Mirovich is dead. The hall's closed down.
I don't know, Danny.
He looked miserable. I didn't blame him. There's a lot of shit you don't know. My teacup rattled slightly again. Power swirled the air in lazy, waving tendrils.
If I didn't know better, I'd say it's gotten stronger. I've gotten stronger.
I shoved that thought away as far as it would go. I didn't need another problem. His eyes nickered up to my face, slid away. He could barely stand to look at my new face, and my heart squeezed inside my chest.
Don't ride my ass, Danny! I've given you all I got. Now go and get this thing done so I can go home and sleep again.
Why are you afraid? You weren't part of it.
Don't look like this thing's too fucking selective if it'd kill a normal.
Thank you, Eddie. That is precisely what's been bothering me. Why would whoever it was kill a normal to start off with? Unless it was practice, a dry run. But that doesn't seem too likely. Once you've mastered feeder glyphs and enough power to charge a ceremonial magic circle, dry runs lose their usefulness. The higher up you go, the more everything depends on working perfectly under pressure, getting it right enough to work the first time.
Unless the normal wasn't so normal.
But the coroner's scans would have caught it if he'd been a scion.
I stared at my water glass, my index finger tracing a glyph on the table. A loose, spiked, fluid, twisting glyph in another magical language. A glyph scored into my own flesh. If I kept tracing it, fiddling with it, would I eventually get an answer? A whole year of longing hadn't brought me anything but grief.
Quit daydreaming, Danny.
What are you aiming at, Eddie?
Seems like someone's cleaning up some loose ends, don't it?
I called Bastion. He'll see you as soon as you want.
Eddie sank down further in his seat, studying me.
You're looking better, girl.
Thanks. I don't think my tone could have been any drier or more ironic. You got me a personal interview with Polyamor. Just how friendly were you?
There it is, that flush again. I never thought I'd live to see Eddie acting like a blushing teenager.
I planned on interviewing Polyamor anyway. But having an introduction would make it much easier.
Friendly enough.
Eddie reached for the second full glass of beer and downed it. Then he smacked it back down with a little more force than necessary. He looked at the two empty glasses with a mournful expression, his lips pulled down and his sleepy eyes pupil dilated and dark under his frowsy, bushy blonde hair. Eddie, you want another one?
No, Danny.
He tapped his blunt fingertips on the table. What? I had, for the first time ever since Jaframel altered me, lost my appetite. I pushed the remains of the second bowl of beef pho away.
Nothing. Just be careful.
Since when have I ever been careful, Eddie?
I never would have guessed Eddie knows the most famous transvestite sex witch in the western half of the hegemony well enough to get me an immediate interview. Wonders never cease in this wide, wide world.
Careful. Well, you might have been once or twice when you was young.
Eddie's lips pulled back in a brave attempt at a smile. Maybe. When I was young. I set my teacup down, extended my hand over the table. Eddie, thanks. The words failed me. If I still had nightmares about Rigor Hall, he probably did too.
And if my reaction to having the hall resurrected are enough to make me laugh like a crazed lunatic into the dirt under my own home, what is Eddie going through? Haven't we suffered enough, both of us?
Eddie looked at my hand. His eyes flicked back up to my face. He extended his own hand, touched fingertips with me.
I gotta be able to sleep again, Danny.
It was the first time he had ever voluntarily touched me. We are skittish about being touched, we scions. My throat was dry.
I'll catch him, Eddie. Or her. Whoever's doing this, I swear it.
He snatched his fingertips away.
Yeah, you do that. Word of advice, when you do catch him, don't bring him back alive. Anything to do with Rigor Hall is better dead.
You better believe it, Eddie.
Including us. Eddie moved, sliding his legs out of the booth and standing up.
He tapped at his dad band, then looked down at me.
Sometimes I think so.
His eyes were still haunted wells.
Then I look at Gabe, and I ain't so sure.
I found nothing to say to that. I let him go. I touched my own dat band and found out he'd paid for my dinner. Nice of him. Oh, Eddie. I took one last mouthful of tea, rolling it around in my mouth to wash away the taste of fear before swallowing. It would take something stronger than tea to get that taste off my tongue, though. I came in the back way, dropping into my backyard.
My board needs servicing.
The media van sat squat and dark at my gate, bristling with fiber optics and satellite dishes to catch footage if I ever came in through the front door. I toyed with the idea of giving a press conference. It wouldn't help anything, but it would put off what I had to do next. I let myself in the back door. Jace looked up. He was pulling his t-shirt down and buttoning his jeans. His golden hair was mussed, sticking up in all directions. But at least he was clean.
Hey, baby. What did Eddie have to say?
I shook my head.
Got any coffee? We're going to Polyamor's as soon as possible.
I didn't think you liked bought sex, sweets. And I didn't think a femme personator was your type.
I made a face at him before I could help myself, sticking my tongue out. His blue eyes danced, and I was surprised by the way my heart squeezed down on itself.
Turns out Eddie knows her. They were chums back at school. And Polly might know something about this group of students that took Mirovich down.
I guess that wasn't a rumor after all. I wonder what else isn't a rumor.
Good.
He poured me coffee, brought it over. I folded my hands around the cup, grateful for the warmth, both of the cup and of his concern.
Do you think that's what happened?
Carefully reined curiosity sparkled behind his eyes.
It's as good a place as any to start. It's our first break. Eddie's nervous. Says if the murderer started with a normal, then he obviously isn't too picky about his prey.
I stared down into the thick black liquid.
I like Jace's coffee. He's the only one who makes it strong enough.
I know that look.
He leaned hip-shot against the kitchen counter, cocking his head. Breathless morning darkness pressed against the kitchen window.
What are you thinking, Danny?
What doesn't bother me about this? It's going too slow. I should have latched onto something before this.
Something about that normal bothers me. Why would he have a sealed trust? Why would he have shields? It doesn't make any sense.
He nodded. He made a face as if he'd burned himself.
Yeah, it's weird. And who is this killer?
I shrugged.
Maybe Polyamor can tell us.
You want me to go with you?
He arched one eyebrow. He took another long draft from his coffee cup and grimaced. If it didn't hurt going down, it didn't feel like real coffee to him.
Sure. I hear Polly likes pretty boys.
I caught myself smiling, tilting my head slightly to the side and regarding him.
She might tell you more than she tells me.
You're using me for my looks.
I guess so. Does that bother you?
The smile felt natural. So natural, the corners of my eyes crinkled.
Nah, I kinda like it.
The footlocker lay silently in the middle of the living room, dusty with sterile earth. I regarded it from the doorway the way a mongoose might stare at a particularly poisonous cobra. Jace, behind me, didn't ask what was in it. I'd waited for false dawn, pearly gray light beginning to flower through the windows. Hover traffic was picking up. St. City's heartbeat quickened slightly, shaking off dreaming and getting ready for the day. I still waited, watching the gray metal as if it would sit up and accuse me. Jace was absolutely still at my shoulder, obviously curious, wanting to ask, not daring to.
Why is this so hard? I've grown past Rigor Hall, haven't I?
I was beginning to think I wasn't as far past it as I had hoped. I glanced at the tapestry on the west wall. Isis's arms were crossed protectively, and Horus's ferocious eye gazed serene and deadly. The gods were not actively involved, but their backs were not turned either. Whatever I did, they would witness. That's not as comforting as it could be. I sensed both my fieldstone altar and my main altar were humming with power, and the house shields were thick and carefully laid.
Nothing can harm me here. This is my home, my sanctuary, and nothing in there can hurt me now.
The locker's closed metal face taunted me.
Yeah, right.
My left shoulder burned steadily. It felt as if the ropey scar was pulsing, sliding against itself, straining. I took the first step into the room and approached the footlocker cautiously, placing each footfall carefully, as if I was on unsteady ground. I sank down beside it on the hardwood floor, my knee on the thick, patterned rug I used for meditation.
Okay, Danny. Don't forget to breathe.
I used a bit of power, and the padlock clicked open.
Gods. Sounds like a frozen corpse's jaw is wrenching open.
I clenched my teeth together.
Strong. I am strong. I survived this.
I laid the padlock aside and opened the top slowly.
Valentine D. Student Valentine is called to the headmaster's office immediately.
The bright eyes of the kids in my class, all solemn and horrified and squeamishly glad their name hadn't been called. Woodenly reaching my feet, setting my battered magical theory textbook aside, the teacher, Ambrose Roth, a ceremonial and one of the worst at the hall, had a ratty little face gleaming with curiosity, mousy hair pulled up in a tight bun, aura geometric and cold blue. Roth staring at my back as I walked to the door, her attention like the filthy prick of a rat's claws against my nape. My shoes squeaked against the stairs in the main hall, heading to the headmaster's office, the collar far too heavy on my neck, frantically trying to remember an excuse, any excuse that would keep me from being beaten, or worse. At Rigor Hall, it was likely to be worse. My fingers trembled, my nails scraping against the metal as I pushed it all the way open.
Chango, Danny, you're pale. You don't have to do this.
Yes, I do.
I looked down. There, laid on top, was the collar, a curve of dark metal. Waves of shudders rippled down my back.
Oh.
My shoulder burned, a fierce pain I was glad of. It kept me anchored.
You've faced worse than this, haven't you, Danny? You've killed Santino. You've faced down the devil himself. You don't have anything to fear from the detritus of your past.
I denied the trembling that rose up in me.
That's a collar.
Every scion hates the thought of collars. They're supposed to protect the normals from us. But the deadheads are not the ones who need protection. They are in the majority, no matter how many holovids have scions in their storylines. They make the rules, and those of us with talent have to dance to their tune. Collars make them feel better, sure, but there's only so much of being collared a human being can take.
Shut up, Jason.
The house shields went hard and crystalline, on the verge of locking down as if I was under attack. Tried to make my shoulders a little less tense. The arc of dull, dark metal with circuit etching on one side was dead and quiescent. Without a power pack and the school security net, it was useless. Still, I handled it as if it was live, flipping out a knife and using the bright blade to lift it, laying it aside. I still remembered the hideous jolts. With a collar live and locked in, Asai couldn't protect herself. It short-circuited most types of power. The teachers had controls to change the settings in order for the students to practice. The principle behind the collars was to keep a scion from harming anyone while she learned to control her gifts. I suppose it was a good idea. But like all good ideas, someone had found a way to make it go horribly wrong. When a collar was live, a plasgun shock administered from a prod hurt like hell, burning through every nerve, as if you were being electrocuted, It didn't leave much in the way of permanent scarring. Not on the outside, anyway. Underneath was a pad of dirty green cloth. Rough synth wool cut from an institutional bedspread in the long, low girls' dormitory. I flipped that aside, keeping one eye nervously on the collar.
My last school uniform.
Plaid skirt, the white cotton blouse dingy with age, knee socks, the heavy shoes I had always hated, the navy synthwool blazer with the crest of Rigor Hall worked in gold thread. I put the other five uniforms into an incinerator, but this one was the one I was wearing when the hegemony had finished the inquiry and pronounced Mirovich posthumously guilty. After the inquiry, we were free to wear normal clothes, and the hall was visited by social workers every week. The sais were uncollared for visits with their social workers, and surprise inspections became the rule. The new headmistress, Stabenow, had supervised the closing of the school after my class graduated. The younger students had scattered to other hegemony schools, hopefully better policed. I lifted each item out reverently and laid it aside, still neatly folded. Jace was completely silent. Tears welled up. I denied them, pushed them down. Invoked anger instead. A thin, unsteady anger that at least did not choke me. Under the uniform, books. School books, mostly. Each with their brown paper cover decorated with glyphs done in pen. Numbers, notes. Under them, 11 slender books bound in maroon plas leather with gold foil lettering on the side.
Yearbooks.
I lifted them out carefully. Some junk jewelry and a threadbare teddy bear were wedged into the remaining space. The teddy's plastic eyes glinted at me. Louis had given me the teddy.
Danny, you survived, goddammit. You survived because you were strong enough to put this behind you. Strong enough to go into death itself. Don't you start feeling sorry for yourself, Dante Valentine. Pull yourself together and do what has to be done, like you've done all your life. Do this. You will only have to do this once.
I decided I could look at this just once.
Just this once.
I was strong enough for that. I swallowed bile. My rings sparked and swirled uneasily. The mark on my shoulder crunched with pain. I smelled dust and must and old things. Felt the phantom blood drip down my back again. In the very bottom of the locker was the only thing I've ever stolen without being paid to do so. It was a long, flexible whip, real leather, with a small metal flechette at the tip. It was still crusted with rusting stains.
Blood stains.
I touched the whip with one finger. The shock jolted up my arm. Pain, fear, sick excitement. I snatched my hand away.
Rowana.
She was Serain. She tried to tell her social worker what was happening at the hall, but the bastard wouldn't believe a kid, and had a nice little conference with the headmaster. Mirovich whipped her almost to death, and then signed the papers to make her a breeder. She committed suicide. Threw herself on the fencing with her collar turned all the way up.
Danny.
I ran the back of my hand over my cheek, bared my teeth as if I was facing a fight. I stacked the school books on top of the whip, pushed the teddy back in his place, then put the uniform and the sheet of green cloth back. I used a knife blade to lift the collar up, laid it on top. I closed the top. I flipped the padlock up and jammed it closed. I resheathed my knife and slid my hands under the stack of 11 yearbooks.
Clear off the table in the dining room, will you?
I gained my feet and turned around, the negligible weight of the books in my arms seeming much heavier. Jace's face was set and white, his mouth a thin line. His eyes burned. Fury boiled in the air around him, his aura hard-spiked and crystalline.
They did that to you, didn't they?
Despite his anger, his tone was dead level, calm.
I always wondered who made you so afraid.
Afraid?
That puzzled me.
It's not in you to be afraid, is it? You're supposed to fight. The classics Lewis poured into you taught you that much.
The only way to kill your fears is to fight them. Be as frightened as you want, then do what you have to do.
Lewis, I got whipped once. Put in the cage 4 times. Branded. I was lucky it wasn't more.
Lucky nothing happened that broke me. Nothing big. Nothing I couldn't handle, Jace.
Lucky? Danny.
Clear office space on the table, Jace. The sooner we get this done, the sooner I can bury this again.
And by the grace of Anubis, I can't wait to bury this again.
He stared at me for a few more moments, jaw working, then turned on his boot heel and stalked away soundlessly. I knew that set to his shoulders, the controlled, angry grace. Jace was furious. I had only seen him in a rage 2 times, but 2 times had given me a healthy respect for his anger.
I wonder if I'm going to see it again. I hope not. If he goes Nova, I might draw steel on him, and I don't quite trust myself with edged metal right now.
I carried the books into the dining room. He moved jerkily, clearing a space on the table. Other texts on demonology and basic magi theory, drifts of paper where I'd made notes, and the talismans Jace had been working on. He stacked them all to the side, and I put the 11 yearbooks down.
Who are we looking for?
He set a 4-book set of Tierley's Democria Demantia on one of the chairs with excessive, delicate care. I picked up a piece of fine parchment, a twisted glyph that was Jeffra Mel's name branded into my shoulder, repeated over and over again in different permutations.
I didn't even realize I was doodling this.
I was suddenly more grateful for Jace's presence than ever. I had to force myself to speak quietly.
Well, after we visit Polyamor, we'll have some more names. But I want to find out if Christabel's class had anyone named Keller. Can you get my bag and your dat pilot? I want to see if there are any ceremonials in town.
Why ceremonials? You thinking they might have a connection to this?
Ceremonial magicians weren't as rare as necromancers or as common as shamans. They worked with the 9 canons and the 7 seals, charging and containing power in objects, working with talismans, and providing permanent defenses for corporations, not to mention doing theoretical work and research into magic and the science of power. Most teachers and trainers were ceremonial magicians. But there was a simpler reason why I wanted to find out who was in town. I met his worried blue eyes and gave him a smile that didn't feel natural at all.
I want to find out if any of them have gone feeder.
Because out of all scions, it was the ceremonials, those who dealt with the theory of containing power, who most often turned feeder in adulthood. And if we had a ceremonial on our hands who had gone feeder and was hunting down former Rigor Hall students, the whole city's collection of scions would have to be alerted.
And then I'd need all the help I can get.
Soon we were into the 3rd book. Jace tapped another name into his dat pilot, glancing up briefly as I passed him. I padded into the kitchen. Late morning light glowed in the windows. I leaned a hip against the counter.
Hello?
1 moment, please.
Sounds like it's going through relays.
My spine suddenly went cold, as if my body recognized the truth before I did.
Dante Valentine! It is a singular pleasure to be speaking to you again.
My entire body turned to ice. There was only one being in the entire goddamn world that could strangle me with fear in just 2 sentences. The voice was smooth as silk, persuasive, crawling into my head. My phone had no vid shell, for which I was now doubly grateful. If I had to face down the Prince of Hell again, even over a holovid shell, I wasn't sure I would come away from the experience quite sane.
The letter.
I'd chucked it into the garbage. I owed him nothing.
There's no reason for the Prince of Hell to want to talk to me. I've done what he wanted, and I've paid the price.
I had screamed as Jeffra Mel turned to ash in my arms.
Isn't he happy? Isn't that enough? Damn it, why did the devil call me on the phone instead of sending another demon to collect me if he wants me?
He'd done it before.
sending Jaframel and asking me to hunt down Santino, perfectly aware I had my own reasons for wanting the bastard dead.
Anubis protect me.
The jolt of fear that smashed through my throat tasted like iron.
What if Lucifer is involved with the murders?
My entire body went cold. My throat was dry. My hand tightened, digging claw-like fingernails into the countertop.
I can't say the same, Prince.
The memory of the devil's hand crushing my larynx flared up.
What the hell do you want? Leave me alone.
Polite as ever. But I must speak with your lover, and I am unable to contact him in the usual manner. Therefore, I am forced to use the human channels of communication.
What the motherfucking hell is he talking about? My lover? Has Lucifer been spying on me?
My entire body flushed hot, then cold again. My nipples drawing up, my skin going cold and tight as an icy glove.
Is this some kind of joke?
I could actually feel my temper grow thin and brittle, rage rising to wash away sick, deadening fear.
I don't have time for this, Lucifer. You killed Jaframel, you bastard demon. Are you calling to remind me? You think I'm gonna hand Jace over to you? Get a life.
And he's not my lover either, though that's none of your goddamn business, is it, you sack of diseased shit?
The cupboards rattled, but the suspicion, once voiced, wouldn't go away.
Oh, my dear sweet fucking gods, is Lucifer involved in this?
My entire body turned to ice. A solid block of ice.
If this is something to do with demons, I'm dead in the water. But Christabel's body held no hint of demon, no scent of spice and dark flame.
Can it be? You have not resurrected him?
Chalk one up for me. I seem to have a habit of non-plussing demons.
Resurrected?
What the hell does that mean? Jace isn't dead. And if I could have resurrected Jaframel, I would have already done it.
Then I shook myself.
Demons lie. The Prince of Hell is no exception. So he's sent me a little love note, and now he's graduating to obscene phone calls. I have no fucking time for this, not when I'm trying to deal with every goddamn ghost from my childhood trying to climb up through the floor and throttle me.
Go away. You don't need me. I'm not your errand girl anymore. Jaframel is dead. You can't hurt him anymore. You're just lucky I don't come after you for kidnapping Eve. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have real work to do and a killer to catch.
I slammed the phone down so hard the tough plasteel base cracked. I wanted to pick it up again, see if he was still on the line. I wanted to scream. I wanted to dial the operator.
Hello, VidPhone Central. Hook me up to hell. Tell the devil he can have me if he just brings Jaframel back. Tell him I'll do anything he wants if I don't have to face this alone. Tell him, while you're at it, that if he's involved with this, he'd better say his prayers. Because he's meddled in my life one too many times, and if he's killing necromancers in my city, I'm gonna see how much demonic flesh my blade can carve. We're even, sure, but I have a score to settle with you, Lucifer Iblis.
Despite my brave words, I couldn't rescue Doreen's daughter. I stared at the phone, longing to reach through and throttle the Prince of Hell.
Why call me now?
He'd left me to rot in Rio, stewing in the aftermath of Jaframel's death and savage guilt that I hadn't been able to save Eve. The fact that Eve was a demon androgyne, a child I had no hope of raising, didn't salve the ache. Doreen's ghost had asked me to save her, and I'd tried. Tried and failed. Lucifer had Eve now. That I'd had no hope of fighting the devil to keep him away from her didn't ease my conscience one iota. Failed. Just like with Jaframel, lying dead on the white marble plaza under the hammer blow of Nuevo Rio Sun, dead and gone. I kept my hand away from the mark on my shoulder only with a titanic effort of will that left me shaking. Sweat, for once, springing up along my scalp and at the curve of my lower back. I drove my teeth into my lower lip, the sweet jolt of pain shocking me back into some sort of rational frame of mind.
Too bad rational never works where demons are concerned.
Stop it. You don't know the devil jack shit. You're free. He can't hurt you now.
That was a lie. The devil could hurt me plenty if he bestirred himself to do it.
Danny?
I backed away from the phone, eyeing it as if it would rise up and strike me. Given what I knew of demons, it was a distinct possibility.
Danny, who is it?
Wrong number.
The same wrong number that sent a letter I never let you see.
Silence. I glared at the phone, daring it to ring again. It didn't.
Leave me alone. Leave Jace alone. Leave my city alone. You killed Jaframel and stole Eve. You leave me alone, or so help me, I will...
Will what? What can I do? A big, fat nothing. Goose flesh rose rough on my arms. Bumps struggling up under golden skin. I couldn't worry about demons now, too.
Let's just hope he's playing with you, right, Danny? Just torturing the human, making sure you still know who's boss? Who's keeping an eye on your life in case he needs a goddamn hand puppet again?
Finally, my shoulders dropped slightly.
Why would Lucifer pick now to start playing mind games on me again? I haven't done any divination for a week or so, but even when I did, there'd been no whisper of demons in my cards.
Then again, last time there hadn't been any warning either. And that letter, with its fat, blood-red seal?
Don't think like that, Danny. You're gonna get paranoid, and paranoid is exactly what you do not need. Paranoid people don't think clearly.
Despite the fact that paranoid people usually survive better than the foolhardy. Besides, if Lucifer thinks he can use me again, he's gonna have another think coming. A long, hard think. Preferably a painful one.
Danny, I think I have something.
I swallowed, turned away.
No.
My hands shook.
Danny?
I scooped the phone up, pale crimson fury spilling through the trademark sparkles of a necromance in my aura. The cupboard started chattering open and closed, a mug falling from a rack and hitting the wooden floor. Look, you son of a bitch!
Danny? What the hell? You okay?
Jace skidded into the room, his guns out. I'm fine. I was talking to both of them. My throat was full of scorching sand. What's up, Spooky?
Saddle up. I've got another body.
I could almost see Gabe's pale cheeks, the trembling around her mouth.
Where?
I shook my head at Jace, whose hands blurred, spinning the guns back into their holsters. He scanned the room, then stared at me, the question evident in his blue eyes.
Corner of 4th and Trivisadero, the brick house with the holly hedges.
No wonder Gabe sounds uncomfortable. That's precious close to her own home.
Get here quick, we're holding the scene for you.
I'll be there in 10. Let's go, Jace.
You might want to take a look at this first. Are you all right?
His eyes dropped from me to the shattered mug on the floor. Shards of ceramic dust. My anger and fear had shattered the mug, ground into it, compounding injury with insult. It was the blue Bausto mug, the one Jace liked, the one Jaframel had chosen for his use the only time he'd drunk coffee in my house.
Anubis Ether Ka, I don't want to think about it.
What have you got?
I rubbed delicately at my throat with my fingertips, my nails pricking, claws threatening to spring free. My right hand actually itched for my sword hilt, and the sensation was so eerie I almost couldn't feel relieved that it wasn't cramping.
It occurred to me to look at the last yearbook that listed Mirovich as headmaster, the year he died. Guess who was on the student yearbook committee?
Jace looked up from the glossy blue shards of ceramic, and the question in his eyes remained unspoken. I was grateful for that, more grateful than I ever thought I would be to him.
Who?
Christabel Moorcock.
I suppose we had to give the reporters something. Besides, it was too hard to talk while on slickboards with the wind rattling and howling around us. So we took the hover car. The flashes from pictures being snapped bathed the underside of the hover. I glanced out the window, my lip curling, glad of the privacy tinting. Jace drove while I looked through the yearbook from my 8th year at school.
Check page 56.
I flipped through the heavy vellum pages.
Now, look at Moorcock's picture.
Christabel Moorcock, known as Skinny. She grinned out of the page of Hollowvid stills, A 10th-year student with long dark hair and wide dark eyes, her cheekbones standing out and her heart-shaped face a touch too long. The cupid's bow of her mouth was plump and perfect, her eyebrows winged out. The picture was a headshot. It showed only the very top edge of her collar. Below were the usual lists of interests, including fairy ceremonial magic and a small black mark shaped like a spade in a deck of playing cards. I rubbed at it, thinking it an ink blot, but it didn't blur.
The black mark?
Now try page 58. Steven Sebastiano.
Jace's fingers danced over the touchpad, and the AI pilot took over, inserting us into hover traffic. I felt the familiar, unsettling pull of gravity against my stomach. Swallowed hard.
Can it be? You have not resurrected him?
Lucifer's soft, beautiful voice teased at my brain.
Resurrected demon? It's not possible.
But then again, I'd been researching only to try and find out how Jaframel had altered me.
I never thought that it isn't possible that I can bring him back, is it? Is it? I want him back.
That was a child's plaint. I wanted each dead person back. I wanted every person I'd ever loved back.
And I, of all people, should understand the finality of death.
Danny?
I shook myself back into the present and closed the yearbook, not bothering to check Sebastiano's picture.
You're a sneaky bastard.
I was trying to sound admiring.
Good work, Jace. I wouldn't have thought of that. Have you looked to see...
I haven't made a list yet, but I thought it was worth looking into, seeing as how that's the only link between Christabel and Polyamor I can find in the yearbook.
The year Mirovich died, Christabel was on the yearbook committee. Why would she leave a mark? If she did leave a mark, that is, it would be stupid. On the other hand, Mirovich was dead by the time they finalized the yearbook. It came out at the end of the year after the inquest. It's probably nothing. Some primary school bullshit. Still, it's the only clue we've got.
I wonder who lives on Trivisadero.
I looked out the window, seeing the city roll by underneath. Its daylight geography, gray with concrete and splashes of reactive paint marking hover bounce pads. The towers of high-density apartment buildings scrolling down Lossernock Street. If I focused, I could see the strings of power underlying every street and building. The green glow of any trees and gardens that managed to survive. And underneath it all lay the pulsing radioactive smolder of the city's heart. Seething in a white, cold mass of power.
Gabe does.
The hover dropped out of the traffic pattern into a lazy spiral.
Gabe didn't go to Rigger Hall.
I reopened the yearbook, scanned the pages, looking for more black marks.
We're gonna have to make a list.
Here we are. Hey, Danny, who was it on the phone?
It was the goddamn devil, Jace.
Nobody.
My right hand reached up to massage my burning left shoulder through my shirt.
Gods.
Can it be? You have not resurrected him?
Okay.
We were keyed through the police security net. Jace piloted the hover down to land in the driveway of an immaculate brick house. I remembered the place from walking to Gabe's so many times. The holly bushes outside were green and healthy, and the walls behind them covered with the strangely geometric shielding of a ceremonial. There were other police hovers there, including a squat black coroner's hover.
Great.
I triggered the door lock.
Well, what do you know? Digging that coffin up wasn't useless after all.
I hopped out as Jace turned off the drive. The house was 3 stories high and immaculate, the gardens largely ornamental. I saw several rose bushes and a monkey puzzle tree. The roof was new, plasilica made to look like slate, gleaming wetly from last night's rain and the afternoon sunlight. There were officers milling all over the front driveway, a wide, circular field of crushed white stone. At the top of wide granite steps, there was a police guard at the massive wooden front door. 2 Saint City Blues. I saw Gabe's familiar figure come out blinking into the sunlight. She lifted a hand. I saw one of the blues at the door flinch. My nostrils flared. I smelled fear and blood and death and the sharp stink of human vomit.
It must be bad.
I stuffed the yearbook in my bag and curled my left hand around my sword, then struck out for the front door.